Alt, enter, go. All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is a Grim Articles show. I've got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And we are going to go through some more articles, so let's go ahead and get started. First off, we got an article that, well, I kind of found in another server, and I was like, I need to talk about this. So everybody's feeling the weight of inflation. Ugh. And this here. OnlyFans models, sex workers feel pinch of sluggish economy. I'm working harder than ever.
I wouldn't call OnlyFans.
I'm crying. If I had tears, I'd shed. Like, I literally don't have tears to shed for you.
I'm so exhausted, like, from shaking my cooch everywhere.
Here's the world's smallest violin. Like, I literally don't care. Okay. Sex workers and online performers have seen their incomes drop as a sluggish economy has taken its toll on the industry. The plunging economy has been hard on one particular sector. Sex workers, who say that decades-high inflation has forced their clients to cut back on discretionary spending. Allie Ray, a 38-year-old Massachusetts woman who left her $84,000-a-year nursing job to earn a monthly six-figure income... What? On OnlyFans, told the Post on Friday that she and other online creators have seen their incomes take a hit recently. Many top creators are hurting really bad, Ray said. It's definitely something that's happening. Ray, who during the pandemic earned as much as $200,000 a month, told the Post that her income has fallen 25% in recent weeks. Other OnlyFans performers have seen their incomes drop by as much as 50, she said. My traffic has been down a lot. I'm working harder than I ever have been. Ray, who used some of her OnlyFans earnings to create her crypto-friendly platform for erotic performers, told the Post, as one of the site's top earners, she can withstand slowdowns. For those at the bottom, however, they may have to find new lines of work. And that is Miss Allie Ray there. There's a picture here of her.
She is a good-looking nurse.
Jesus, yes. That is surprising.
Still not going to pay for OnlyFans.
For 38.
Well, women are looking younger, older, if they take care of themselves and don't... Yeah. Smoke or do meth.
And here's some more.
Oh yeah. The only thing I don't get about the model of OnlyFans, besides it being a personal window into someone's life, is you can get all that stuff for free now on the internet.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to pay.
But it's all about the personalization. That's why they want it.
Yeah. Oh, this is especially for me.
Now, one of the guys I work with was telling me that the girls will charge $10 for a 15-minute conversation, and he says he likes to hit those up all the time. And a lot of times he finds the girls on there to hook up with. He said, being a younger man, you can find a lot of girls to hook up with on there from the OnlyFans. They literally have, you know, I mean, he literally said it without saying it. That it's basically prostitution.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
So, basically, she said this is going to weed out small-level creators that are not going to be able to withstand the race, she said. If they're not thinking about other endeavors, they soon will be, since a lot of people don't have that extra income. Other OnlyFans models said they've noticed similar trends. I've seen a dip in spenders recently, OnlyFans model Bree Knightwood told Motherboard. My whale tippers haven't been online as often, and I'm getting more freeloaders on my page. Reddit forums frequented by sex workers whose servants clients at brothels said they have seen their workload decrease significantly in recent weeks. I just sat at the broth for 6 hours with zero clients, one anonymous sex worker wrote on Reddit. God damn.
Because what they were paying for sex, they got to buy carbohydrates so they can survive. Yeah.
It makes me so pissy, and it makes me feel so ugly and not good enough to be booked. Another sex worker responded, same at my broth. I'm only getting bookings here and there for my regs. Economy is going to shit. World War III potential. Inflation out of control, another Reddit user commented. People are worried about finances.
I bet, you know what I bet is now at, you really have to watch where your money goes. They aren't just spending money on any... woman with a pair of tits and a vagina. They're only doing like the top grade women. Then the ones that are just average are getting left by the wayside. But you know, that nurse, she is good looking.
And today is the first day of the 3-day meeting of, well, it was the first day meeting of the 3-day Bilderberg meeting. Today, or this time, it was held in Washington, D.C. And, of course, Paul Joseph Watson had a lot to say on that. And I listened to, Jason Dyer on InfoWars, Band.video.
Yeah.
He had a lot to say about the Bilderberg and the history of the meeting and everything. And, oh, man, David Rockefeller talks about everything. I mean, he pretty much says, and he says, look, fact checkers, he's like, it says it right here in his own memoir, you know, what he was going to do. But part of the Bilderberg has to do with the WEF, so let's cover one little conspiracy article here tonight. Vigilant Citizen just recently posted. We know some of these, but we don't know them all. The top 10 creepiest and most dystopian things pushed by the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum is one of the most powerful organizations in the world, and throughout the years, people at the WEF have said some truly insane and dystopian things, and they've managed to word these things in the creepiest ways possible. Here are the top 10 most insane things said by the WEF. When one refers to the global elite, they usually refer to a small group of wealthy and powerful individuals who operate behind national borders. Through various organizations, these non-elected individuals gather in semi-secrecy to decide policies they want to see applied on a global level. The World Economic Forum is smack dab in the middle of it. Indeed, through its annual Davos meetings, don't forget about those, the WEF attempts to legitimize and normalize its influence on the world's democratic nations by having a panel of world leaders attending and speaking at the event. A simple look at the list of attendees in these meetings reveals the organization's incredible reach and influence. The biggest names in media, politics, business, science, technology, and finance are represented. According to the mass media, the Davos meetings gather people to discuss issues such as inequality, climate change, and international cooperation. This simplistic description appears to be custom-made to cause the average citizen to yawn in boredom. But the topics of WEF go much further than inequality. Throughout the years, they have said some highly disturbing things, none of which garnered proper media attention. In fact, when one pieces together the topics championed by the WEF, an overarching theme emerges. Total control of humanity using media, science, and technology while reshaping democracies to form a global government. This sounds like a far-fetched conspiracy theory. Keep reading. Here are the top 10 most dystopian things that are being pushed by the WEF right now. The list is in no particular order because they're all equally crazy. Number 10. The least one can say is Klaus Schwab, the founder and head of WEF, is not a fan of democracy. In fact, he perceives it as an obstacle to a globalized world. In 2010, there was a report called Global Redesign. Schwab postulates that a globalized world is best managed by a self-selected coalition of multinational corporations, governments, and select civil society organizations. This is the exact opposite of a democracy. He argued that governments are no longer the overwhelmingly dominant actors on the world stage, and that the time has come for a new stakeholder paradigm of international governance. For this reason, the Transnational Institute described the WEF as a silent coup d'etat to capture governance. Yeah. 9. Controlling minds using sound waves. We're not going to go through all this. If you're interested, check out the actual article. In 2018, one of the topics of discussion at WEF was mind control using sound waves. I did not alter this title for sensationalism. Those are exactly the words used by the WEF. It says, I can see the day coming where a scientist will be able to control what a person sees in their mind's eye by sending the right waves to the right place in their brain. My guess is that most objections will be similar to those we hear today about subliminal messages and advertisements, only much more vehement. This technology is not without its risks of misuse. It could be a revolutionary healthcare technology for the sick, or a perfect controlling tool with which the ruthless control the weak. This time, though, the control would be literal. Now, some people are already talking about that with the shooter, Ramos and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There was somebody already kind of mentioning that waves could have been just, you know.
Maybe.
8.
I'm going to cancel anything out nowadays because stuff. it was ridiculous.
It's becoming true, yeah. 8. Pills that contain microchips. He says, FDA approved the first electronic pill, if I could call it like that. It is basically a biological chip that is in the tablet, and once you take the tablet, it dissolves into your stomach. It sends a signal that you took the tablet. So imagine the applications of that, the compliance. The insurance companies would know that the medicines that patients should take, what they do to them. It is fascinating what happens in this field. That's not good. praising massive lockdowns. Of course, we remember the video there where they were talking about the lockdowns and how, you know. And they said, oh, we're deleting this tweet. Lockdowns aren't quietly improving cities around the world, but they are an important part of the public health response to COVID-19. As you can see, despite deleting the video, they kept praising lockdowns. That's because the WEF would like to see COVIDian life become permanent. Number six, take a peek into the future. This is basically, they're saying, this is another one that says, NASA has invented a system that can ID you from your heartbeat using a laser. I remember that. Pushing for a great reset. We all remember that. The yep. Great Reset video.
Even Biden's talked about it in some of his speeches.
And that's all about getting the right people at the right time, right place at the right time. Recalibrating freedom of speech. Grant said, we are finding ourselves in a place where we have increasing polarization everywhere and everything feels binary when it doesn't need to be. So I think we're going to have to think about a recalibration of a whole range of human rights that are playing out online. You know, from freedom of speech to the freedom to be free from online violence. That is a call for censorship. Uh-huh. Tracking your clothes. They want RFID chips and QR codes everywhere. According to the WEF, these chips will allow fashion brands to resell their clothes. I have no idea how that would work. The video makes sure not to mention that this technology would be a great way of tracking those who ditch their smartphones. Smartphones will be in your body by 2030. For years, the site has been documenting the elite's incessant push for transhumanism, which is the merging of humans with machines. They're looking to accelerate this transition by making things people cannot live without, such as smartphones, available in transhumanist form. Are you noticing their creepy eagerness to insert things inside our bodies? And number one, you'll own nothing and be happy. Probably the most dystopian moment in WEF history. In 2016, Ida Auken, a member of parliament in Denmark, said, welcome to 2030. I own nothing. I have no privacy and life has never been better. The WEF loved that quote so much that they tweeted about it. They also made a video that we all know about.
Yeah.
I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliance or any clothes, writes Danish MP Ida Auken. Shopping is a distant memory in the city of 2030, whose inhabitants have cracked clean energy and borrow what they need on demand. It sounds utopian until she mentions that her every move is tracked, and outside the city lives swaths of discontents, the ultimate vision of a society split in two. That sounds like we happy few. Honorable mention, individual carbon footprint tracker.
That's what?
WEF uses the environment to promote the micromanagement of human behavior. Evan says the tracker can monitor where they're traveling, how they're traveling, what they're eating, and what they're consuming on the platform. Notice he used the platform they and not we, because there is no way in hell he's going to use that thing. Me neither. No. So there we go. That's the horrible shit that they're doing to us.
Planning
to do to us.
I guarantee you. If they try to take guns away, that's going to start the next civil war.
Yeah. Okay, and we have some other crazy articles. There's something terribly wrong. Oh, we've got a lot of conspiracy stuff tonight. There's something terribly wrong with Euphoria, the teen drama.
Yeah.
This is just an opinion, so I don't really know.
I mean, I like it. I mean, it's got some weird stuff in it I'm not crazy about, but it was overall pretty good what I've seen.
The teen drama Euphoria was described as groundbreaking and controversial, not that Euphoria. But that's putting it lightly. With countless explicit and highly disturbing scenes involving minors, Euphoria ends up accomplishing... God, that's just like another...
It's not actual minors, though.
Right.
That's like saying American Pie was full of
minors. Oh, okay.
Because they're all like in their mid-20s right now.
With countless explicit and highly disturbing scenes involving minors, Euphoria ends up accomplishing one major goal, grooming its young viewers. Here's a deeper look inside this insidious series. The least one can say is that the teen drama is a hit. It is HBO's second most watched show of all time, behind Game of Thrones. Jesus. With over 6 million views per week, Videos and memes of the show are highly viral, especially on TikTok, the favorite social media of children and teenagers. The show's stars are now major celebrities and avidly followed by droves of young fans. With all that being said, here's a question. How many adults actually sat down and watched the thing? Because I did. And it did not leave me feeling euphoric at all. It actually left me with a gut feeling that I've witnessed something deeply toxic. And why are there so many penises in a show marketed to minors? Euphoria is not merely another edgy drama that tackles teen issues such as drugs and sex. It goes way beyond that. The only word that properly describes what's going on in Euphoria is grooming. The now, goal of...
It's marketed just for teens, and I would say, yeah, that is probably grooming. But that's grown people of age.
Yeah, but it's marketed to teenagers, though. It is a teen drama.
Yeah. I'm saying, though, if the same people showed their penis to a teen or showed their vagina or tits to a teen not on the show... then they would be facing charges, but if they do it on TV...
it's different.
Yeah. ...and market it towards kids, it's fine.
And it said, Euphoria is not merely another edgy drama that tackles... okay, we talked about that. The goal of child groomers is to establish a connection with children in order to lower their inhibitions and desensitize them to sexuality. In a twisted and insidious way, Euphoria accomplishes just that. Appropriately enough, Drake, who was accused of grooming teenage girls, including 14-year-old Millie Bobby Brown... that's 11 from Stranger Things, is an executive producer of the show. Some might respond, you don't get it because you're out of touch with the youth culture. No, that's not it. Euphoria is not youth and is not culture. It is old social conditioning. The fact that the characters of the show are constantly on their phones doesn't mean that the show reflects young people. It actually reflects what they want young people to become. The depraved scenes involving minors we see in Euphoria were written by a 37-year-old man named Sam Levinson, the son of famed Hollywood director Barry Levinson. Based on the Israeli miniseries of the same name, the U.S. version of Euphoria manages to take things to another level. I realize that's sounding a bit overdramatic. However, several observers are equally puzzled and disturbed by the fact that Euphoria is being marketed to teenagers. In January 2022, Dare released a statement about Euphoria stating, rather than further each parent's desire to keep their children safe from the potentially horrific consequences of drug abuse and other high-risk behavior, HBO's television drama Euphoria chooses to misguidedly glorify and erroneously depict high school student drug use, addiction, anonymous sex, violence, and other destructive behaviors as common and widespread in today's world. It is unfortunate that HBO, social media, television program reviewers, and paid advertising have chosen to refer to the show as groundbreaking, rather than recognizing the potential negative consequences on school-aged children who today face unparalleled risks and mental health challenges. The key word is destructive. In order to expose its viewers to highly explicit scenes, it exploits a loophole. It is rated 18, and most of the actors who play the high schoolers are over 18. Yeah. Therefore, the show can feature scenes of sex, violence, and drugs with no restrictions. On the other hand, it's clearly marketed to teens and preteens, and there's absolutely nothing stopping them from watching it. The days of young people watching...
the parents, you know.
Well, listen to this. The days of young people watching shows on the family TV are gone. Most of them are now watching streaming content on their own portable devices in complete privacy. Meanwhile, insidious shows such as Euphoria whisper messages in their headphones while these kids' parents are completely clueless. But don't take my word for it. After watching the first season, I'm not ready to subject myself to another 10 hours of this. I've condensed the stories of three main characters of the show. You be the judge. Rue, the pills agenda. Rue is the main protagonist and its all-knowing narrator. It's played by Zendaya, an actress who's immensely popular with children, mainly due to her recurring role in the Spider-Man movies. Not unlike Miley Cyrus, her Zendaya's breakthrough role was on a Disney Channel sitcom called Shake It Up. The young people who love Zendaya and tune into Euphoria are in for a shock. In the first minutes of Euphoria, we see her snorting crushed pills at a party. She's hopelessly addicted to drugs, especially benzos and opioids. Although she clearly struggles with her addiction, the series manages to present her drug experiences in an insidiously attractive light. When she's high, she's always cool and cozy and happy. There's cool music in the background and pleasing visual effects. In short, everything is there to make the young viewers want to try what she's doing. At the beginning of the series, she states she suffers from anxiety, OCD, and bipolar disorder. Later, she's so depressed and can't even walk to the bathroom and ends up in the hospital. The show makes one thing clear, only drugs can bring her relief. Otherwise, existing is a nearly unbearable task. At one point, she talks about the first time she was given liquid Valium at the hospital. This is it. This is the feeling I was searching for my entire life, because as long as I remember. Because suddenly the world went quiet and I felt safe in my own head. Later, she sings the praises of opiates. Nothing in the world comes close to opiates. A good ES 7.5 Vicodin. Fuck. But honestly, the best thing I ever had is fentanyl. And there's not a thing on the planet on Earth that compares to fentanyl. The scene ends like that. There's no but no opiates will kill you, because they will. According to CDC, yeah. opiates overdoses killed 75,673 people between April 2020 and April 2021. That's 75,000 people in 12 months.
Probably
the main cause of these...
That. I've heard it's in the hundreds of thousands.
The main cause of these deaths? Fentanyl. Despite these catastrophic figures, the main character of Euphoria is literally selling fentanyl to young viewers, even going as far as saying that nothing in the world compares to it. Yes, the series does show that there's a bad side to addiction. However, Rue is so miserable when she's sober that one almost wants her to get high again so she stops being so depressed. Towards the end of the season, she talks with a man who's trying to help her break her addiction. While he tries his best, she makes one thing clear. Drugs are the only reason she hasn't killed herself yet. In short, she's not merely a teenager experimenting with pot. She craves synthetic opiates created by pharmaceutical companies which have been profiting from this crap for a horrific crisis for years. And Euphoria, in the most insidious ways imaginable, actually entices its young viewers to want to try them. Jules, the gender-blurring agenda. Jules is played by transgender model and LGBTQ rights activist Hunter Schaefer. 2017, Teen Vogue listed Schaefer on its 21 under 21 list that was granted an interview with Hillary Clinton.
The fact that she took the interview.
Right.
Yeah.
Schaefer is modeled for Prada, Dior, Miu Miu, Calvin Klein, Rick Owens, Helmut Lang, a bunch of other fucking people. In other words, the industry loves her. At the 2021 Met Gala, she went for a demon from the future look. Okay, and in Euphoria, Jules is a 16-year-old transgender girl who just moved into town. As Rue states, she's kind of slutty. At the first minutes of the series, we see her chatting on the dating app with a man named Dominant Daddy. The hookup scene is extremely difficult to watch. She ends up in a motel room with an older man who is obsessed with jamming his thumb down the throats of underage trans girls. Then we clearly see the man's erect member right before he violently penetrates Jules in a scene that is literally unwatchable. It's even unlistenable as there's gagging and such. I cannot imagine a 13-year-old girl witnessing this highly graphic scene depicting statutory rape between an old man and a minor. Holy shit!
Yeah, the guy plays the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the main characters, and he's in a bunch of movies. I recognized him.
No, I didn't know that.
I can't think of the movies. You'd have to look up his
right.
You'd have to look up Euphoria and then
look
find
up
him
his
and
name,
then look
yeah.
up his stuff. But I think he's either 50 now or
oh man.
So and I think that transgender one is like 23.
Right. But Jules was not forced to do any of this, and after this highly degrading scene, Jules just rides the bicycle to a nearby party as if nothing happened. Because in Euphoria, this is normal. It's all about sexualizing minors and normalizing pedos. Later in the series, we see Jules being rammed by the old guy again. Rue explains when things got really uncomfortable, Jules would just imagine she wasn't really herself and this wasn't really her life. She was just a character in a book or movie or show that none of it was real, and if it was, how did it matter? It's not like her body really belonged to her in the first place. In other words, she dissociates from reality. It's almost as if the makers of Euphoria are giving tips to their young viewers on how to deal with degrading sadistic encounters with full-grown men. The makers of Euphoria also use Jules to normalize transitioning genders during childhood using extreme medical procedures. Numerous times during the series, Jules is seen injecting products such as dilestrogen, female hormones. Jules also has a Supperlin implant, a hormone blocker. Jules says the chip stops my voice from dropping and my balls from getting bigger. Like Rue, Jules relies heavily on products created by big pharmaceutical companies to tolerate being alive. And like Rue, the potentially disastrous side effects of these products are never addressed. In fact, Euphoria goes out of its way to promote these products. At one point, she explains the process of transitioning by comparing it to a character leveling up in a video game. It started with clothes and then it was makeup and eventually hormones. I just kept kind of leveling up. So what level are you at now? I don't know, but I definitely haven't reached my full power. Several health practitioners have stated that giving children hormones and hormone blockers is a form of child abuse.
Yeah.
But not in Euphoria. These things, which did not even exist a few years ago, are a way of leveling up. Kat, the sexualization of minors agenda. At the beginning of the series, Kat is a nerdy 16-year-old girl. She's also a virgin. And in the world of Euphoria, that's an unacceptable situation that needs to be addressed as soon as possible. Nearly everyone around Kat tells her to catch a D. It is repeated several times by several characters. Repetition is key to child grooming. Soon enough, Kat catches a D at a party, and everybody is so proud of her. In Euphoria, the word slut is a compliment. They literally say, oh my god, my little slut, I'm so proud of you. Sadly for Kat, her first experience was filmed and it was posted on the internet, and everyone knows about it. While Kat was distressed at first, she noticed the video had lots of views and positive comments.
She's the fat, heavy-set girl in the series.
Kat feels so validated that she decides to take things further.
She does OnlyFans, basically.
Then Euphoria presents to its young viewers a step-by-step guide to becoming a cam girl. Kat signs up for an adult site to get paid. Then this old dude starts camming with 16-year-old Kat. This old dude asks Kat to insult him, and when she does, he whips out his micro penis and starts rubbing it feverishly. We see everything. None of it is censored. But that doesn't matter. Kat appears to enjoy insulting the guy. More importantly, she's making money. Yeah. In fact, the show explains exactly how Kat can get paid anonymously by pedos by using cryptocurrency. Kat receives money on her phone. What teenager wouldn't like that? After becoming a cam girl, she goes to school with a cool new look and feels great about herself. Yup, being an underage internet prostitute is awesome. The show keeps encouraging minors to take lewd pictures and videos of themselves. In one particularly upsetting scene, Rue and Jules explain how to take a good dick pic. That segment contains dozens upon dozens of pictures of actual penises because of grooming. In another bizarre diatribe, Rue explains why young people have to send naked pictures of themselves. I'm sorry, I know your generation relied on flowers and father's permission, but it's 2019 and unless you're Amish, nudes are the currency of love, so stop shaming us. What? Kids taking pictures using the latest iPhone and sending them to the 5G network is a great idea. There's no way this stuff can get intercepted and stored on databases that are viewable by sickos. Hashtag sarcasm. After Kat's transformation, she hooks up with several random dudes and copulates with them on the spot. At a Halloween party, she dresses as a satanic nurse, inspired by Thana from the highly disturbing movie MS-45. I've never heard of that movie. Then she gets laid in that costume, and it's all highly graphic. By continuing displaying explicit scenes, Euphoria basically subjects its young viewers to beta kitten programming on mass scale. From an article about Monarch programming, betas referred to as sexual programming, slaves. This programming eliminates all learned moral convictions and stimulates the primitive instinct devoid of inhibitions. Cat alters may come out at this level. Known as kitten programming, it is the most visible kind of programming, as some female celebrities, models, actresses, and singers have been subjected to this kind of programming. In popular culture, clothing with feline prints often denotes kitten programming. Her name is Cat. She wears a kitten mask and feline print top. Beta kitten programming. I could go on for days about Euphoria. Nearly every scene has some sort of angle with a toxic message, but we've all seen more than enough. I did not dig up some weird obscure series to complain about. This is what kids are watching now. It's on HBO. It's backed by Drake. It's viral on TikTok. The stars of the show are major celebrities. Teen magazines are calling them iconic. But Euphoria is not entertainment. It's social conditioning. It captures the attention of young people with relatable high school drama and shocks them with scenes of extreme depravity. After a while, the shock fades away and the viewers become desensitized. This is what grooming is all about. Euphoria is not youth culture. It's what the elite wants youth to become, a generation of sad and confused people, hopelessly addicted to big pharma drugs and constantly engaging in degrading acts, all under the watchful eyes of the sick pedos who want their sickness to become accepted. Want to really feel euphoric? Turn this garbage off and go outside. Wow. Got another one. It is Conspiracy Day. Because that's the articles we have. Don't really know what this one's going to be. But let's get it going. Vigilant Citizen again. We've got actually one more after that with Vigilant. And then we'll do regular articles. Megan Fox openly admits that she drinks blood for ritual purposes. In an interview with Glamour magazine, Megan Fox revealed that she drank blood for ritual purposes. Also, her boyfriend, Machine Gun Kelly, has a demonic spirit hovering over him. Well, here's a look at this revealing interview. Ever since Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly became a thing, things became weird. But that specific kind of weirdness is actually the norm in Hollywood. Megan Fox and MGK are simply more transparent about it than most. This bizarre relationship between two industry pawns was first publicized in MGK's video, Bloody Valentine. Little did we know, the song's title was to be taken literally. Since then, the couple has been hinting at its obsession with each other's blood. In an Instagram post from 2021, MGK creepily wrote, "I wear your blood around my neck." He added emojis representing a knife and a drop of blood. In a post celebrating the couple's engagement, Megan Fox just came out and say it. In July 2020, we sat under this banyan tree. We asked for magic. We were oblivious to the pain we would face together in such a short, frenetic period of time. Unaware of the work and sacrifices the relationship would require, from us, but intoxicated off of the love and the karma. Somehow, a year and a half later, having walked through hell together and laughed more than I ever imagined possible, he asked me to marry him. And just as in every lifetime before this one, and as in every lifetime that will follow it, I said yes, and we drank each other's blood. And a post that contains... Okay. And then she concludes with, and then we drank each other's blood. Okay. The ring contains a highly symbolic feature. There's a ring there. The bands are actually thorns, so she tries to take it off. It hurts. Ouch. The ring perfectly represents Fox's status as an industry slave. If she tries to break free, she will be hurt. In a recent interview, she exposed how deep she was in Hollywood insanity. Her response, I guess drank each other's blood might mislead people, or like people are matching us with goblets, like we're Game of Thrones drinking each other's blood. It's just a few drops, but yes, we do consume each other's blood on occasion for ritual purposes only. It is used for a reason and is controlled, where it's like, let's shed a few drops of blood and each drink it. For years, articles on the site have been highlighting the elite's obsession with cannibalism and drinking blood as part of occult rituals. Many dismiss these claims as crazy conspiracy theories. It's real, and now they're trying to normalize it. Fox went on to describe MGK's advanced sort state of insanity. He's much more haphazard and hectic and chaotic, where he's willing to just cut his chest open with broken glass and be like, take my soul, let me bleed on you. That happens? It doesn't not happen, let me tell you. Maybe not exactly like that, but a version of that has happened, and many times. Later in the interview, Fox talks about consuming ayahuasca with MGK in the jungle. We need to give you three doses because you're such a dark, sad spirit. Yo, hold on. You have such a dark, sad spirit standing behind you. Wow, that's Megan Fox they're talking about. Oh no, that's MGK they're talking about. Fox then explains that nobody was surprised by the spiritual diagnostic. It's like an actual demonic spirit was hovering over him. To no one's surprise, anyone that knows him. When I tell the story, nobody's like, oh my god. Everyone's like, mm-hmm, and then what? Because we all know that. With songs like Born with Horns, this all makes sense. Megan Fox and MGK are often seen with Travis Barker and Kourtney Kardashian. That's because they share common interests. In an aforementioned Glamour interview, Fox is asked, what do you do on your double dates with Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker? Fox's answer was rather vague and evasive. That's because the truth would probably upset Glamour magazine readers, but here are some clues. I'll let you piece together the pieces of this puzzle. In an Instagram post, Travis Barker captioned a picture with two emojis, a male vampire and a female vampire. This caption is to be taken literally. She's Kourtney Kardashian, I want to suck your blood. Kourtney Kardashian, okay, at Kourtney Kardashian, okay, too much, calm down. And then Travis Barker says, my favorite, and he puts a blood drop. This is Travis Barker from Blink-182, bro. In the comments, Kourtney wrote, I want to suck your blood. Travis replied, my favorite, with a drop of blood emoji. These comments are to be taken literally. A few weeks prior, Barker posted this picture of a vial containing his blood. Kourtney reposted this picture and added a black heart emoji. No further explanation was offered for the interaction. She just posted it. In short, Barker and Kardashian are afflicted with the same sicknesses as Megan Fox and MGK and Armie Hammer and Elizabeth Bathory and many others. In a Glamour interview, Megan Fox's blood ritual revelations were preceded and followed by a whole lot of Hollywood virtue signaling. Indeed, Fox began talking about how she was a feminist icon who fought the patriarchy and so forth. This generic blabbering set the table for her casually talking about literally drinking blood as if it was not completely insane. The interview went on to discuss Fox's son Noah, who had been wearing dresses since he was 2 years old. Two! Fox with her... Oh, man. She's got a picture of him in a dress. Fox went on to explain that she brought books written by transgender children to talk about this stuff to her son. Megan Fox with her three sons. Noah wears a shirt that says Strong Girls. Oh my god, that's her fucking son?
Huh?
Jesus. That's Megan Fox's son?
Who?
The third one, on the left with the pink shirt. And the, oh my god. Hollywood witchery and sons wearing dresses go hand in hand, ask Madonna. In conclusion, Megan Fox literally said that she partakes in blood rituals with her boyfriend who happens to be demonically possessed. What else do you want to know about the entertainment industry? These people are completely sick, and it's only the tip of the iceberg. In these circles, the blood of children is deemed more potent. But I guess that's another crazy conspiracy theory. Yeah. Okay, we've got another one. I said it's a lot of conspiracy today. Another one. You may not be too familiar with this artist, but we probably have heard her on the speaker or the music, the little thing they have at work.
Yeah.
Charlie XCX and her story about selling her soul to fame. Charlie XCX's album Crash has been topping the charts. Coincidentally, this album is all about selling her soul to the devil. Here's a symbol. Look at the symbolism surrounding the English pop star. For years, she's been working relentlessly to move up in the industry. Since 2013, the singer and songwriter released 5 albums to critical acclaim while winning industry trophies. However, despite her success, she could still not be called a pop star. Indeed, the proverbial spotlight did not shine on Charlie as intensely as other pop stars. So what was missing? Looks? Talent? Hard work? No, she had to sell her soul to the devil. And not figuratively. And that's what she did. In a rather blatant Instagram post, Charlie writes, "Tip for new artists, sell your soul for money and fame." Along with this caption are symbolic pictures including a satanic G-string. In another post, Charlie writes, "Baby's blood," with an emoji representing a martini glass, implying that this blood is being ingested. This is a reference to the occult elite's favorite obsession, consuming blood, human blood and flesh. But YouTube will tell you it's bullshit. And everybody, all the other fact checkers would tell you it's bullshit. Oh, we don't consume blood, baby's blood, people's blood. Yes, you fucking do. I mean, come on. When they're over there on Instagram talking about blood and drinking blood and, I mean, man. I mean, that's a little weird, right? I mean, and it's not like there aren't captions of the posts here. There's captions of the posts right here in the article where they're talking about baby's blood and posts with a fucking shot glass. Or, not a shot glass, but a martini glass. Shortly before Halloween, Charlie posted a pic... good night! Depicting a satanic blood ritual, because that's actually what they do around this time of year. Oh, man. In occult circles, the initiation of a candidate involves a symbolic death and rebirth. This is what Crash is all about. The art of Crash depicts her being killed in a car crash. The subtle one-eye sign created by her strategically placed hair indicates this is all occult symbolism. In a post celebrating her success, she posts a picture of her lying in a casket. Upon the release of Crash, a slew of music videos were released. 2 of them stand out from the lot. Here's a look at them. The lyrics to Good Ones are about Charlie wanting to end a healthy relationship because she craves evilness. The lines sum up the song. I want the bad ones because they're all I know. I always let the good ones go. While the song appears to be about Charlie being attracted to bad boys, the video indicates that the relationship is actually spiritual. The entire video takes place at a funeral, people mourning and stuff. Then she emerges with her witch coven or something. And that does look like a witch coven. While everybody's wearing black, Charlie and her girls... I mean, look, folks. You know what Bible Black looks like when we go into the apartment and what the girls are wearing? That's literally damn near what the girls are wearing in this video. And you know how they're just thin enough where the girls are wearing nothing underneath but very... Yeah, that's literally... It almost looks like Bible Black. I'm not fucking with you. Well, everybody's wearing black. Charlie and her girls also wear red. The color, occultly... I'm actually going to download the image and post it just so you guys can see I'm not bullshitting. Associated with initiation blood sacrifices. They're holding burning Bibles. An image that sums up the satanic subtext of the video. Throughout the video, she appears to be extremely turned on by the dead body. Bizarre mix of death and sexuality is in line with the elite sick culture of death. Behind the casket is an interesting figure. If it was a regular church, you'd see a crucifix. But if you look closely, that's not Jesus at all. That appears to represent the Roman soldier who speared Jesus while he was crucified to make sure he was dead. Yep. Satanic black masses are all about the reversal and perversion of rituals and symbols in Christianity. Enshrining the guy appears Jesus instead of Jesus himself is a good example. Lurking in the background is a weird-looking priest. His eye patch turns to face the one-eye sign again, hinting at this being occult elite garbage. In a rather grim scene, Charlie and her girls get overly excited by the burial hole. This is really fucked up. At one point, Charlie is seen laying on her own tombstone. This is like black metal shit, but it's pop music. The burial date is March 2022, which is the release date of her albums. In short, Good Ones is all about celebration of death and a satanic black mass. If you believe I'm going a little too far with the ritual, you should check the alternative video. And the drag performance video, a bunch of drag queens who rang wearing symbolic red, dance inside a desecrated church. Behind them is an inverted cross, the ultimate symbol representing Satanism. Whoa! Yeah, it's there alright. Again, this is black metal shit! What the hell are they doing... With pop music. Good Ones is about Charlie's symbolic death and pending rebirth as part of the music industry. The video Beg For You appears to continue in this ritualistic narrative. Beg For You are longing about someone who's a jerk. Of course, the video is about ritualistic initiation that includes drinking blood, because after letting the good one go, God, Charlie begs for the jerk, Satan. The song features Rina Sawayama, an up-and-coming artist who has been enjoying unfaltering praise from mass media. One Eye Signs, she is pushing the elite's agenda. Okay. Both Charlie XCX and Rina Sawayama are ready to take their careers to another level, but first they have to partake in the weird ritualistic crap. The Beg For You video is about that. It begins with Charlie, Rina, and the Coven of Witches following some sort of spiritual leader. And yes, that is a coven. Also, here's the thing. There's this thing, which looks like some weird demon character. It's all black. The coven is led to a place where something unholy is about to happen. There's a horned skull surrounded by a circle of sticks. Charlie and Rina take place in a ritualistic manner. She's given a sharp object with squeezes until she bleeds. Blood drops into a pool of water. Then there's a spiritual guide that scoops up some of the blood water and drinks it. I hope you've been noticing the elite has been increasingly open about its obsession with drinking human blood. After the ritual, the coven gets into a trance-like state, dances around the pool of bloody water. The initiation ritual is complete, and another crappy video is released to the world. After years of hard work in the industry, with albums leading towards innovation and experimentation, she wanted to go mainstream, so she made mainstream music. More importantly, she complied with the industry's requirements of selling her soul and pushing a sick agenda. The result is Crash, an album surrounded by over-the-top madness. Some might argue that Charlie's act is so blatant that it's actually satirical, a second-degree comment on the state of the industry. That might be a way of seeing things. However, the end result is the same. Through her works, Charlie propagates in popular culture the same messages, the same symbolism, the same satanic energy as others. With that being said, did the soul-selling work out for Charlie? At first glance, yes. She's enjoying that sweet mass media attention. Yeah, the record debuted at number one in the USA, and it's her best-selling album to date. But was it worth it? I'll let Charlie's own Instagram post answer that question. The caption of the post is, "Tip for new artists. It only gets worse. The high heels and the chain refer to the sexual slavery of industry pawns." Wow. Okay, and we have... they have this that I didn't really know about. Okay, this is something completely different. I haven't seen the video, but it's probably something we should check out. You might even want to check it out. The Occult History of the U.S. Military PSYOPs and its Highly Symbolic Recruitment Video. There was a video produced by the 4th PSYOP, and it hints at the various ways mass media is used to wage war on the public psychologically. Here's a look at the video in the strange occult history of PSYOPs. The goal of PSYOPs is to mess with people's minds. Appropriately enough, a recent recruitment video by the 4th group accomplished that. Posted on official social media accounts associated with the U.S. military, the video titled Ghost in the Machine gathered some viral traction as viewers were impressed with the video's production quality while being baffled by its overarching message and symbolism. We believe in ghosts. Do you? What does it all mean? To better understand the video, well, we're not going to go into the entire history of fucking PSYOPs. Wow. Yeah, because this goes into Michael Aquino. Yeah, that's real deep shit. Mind War. That's... okay. With all that being said, let's take another look at the video. The recruitment video revolves around the saying, "All the world's a stage," a quote from William Shakespeare, which compares the world to playing people to actors. However, in the context of the PSYOP, the quote takes on a deeper meaning. Many of the events we see around the world are staged and choreographed by unseen puppet masters. Appropriately enough, the video begins with the words, "Have you ever wondered who's pulling the strings? A puppet master pulls the strings." The creepy figure appears throughout the video without revealing himself. However, his silhouette looks familiar. That's right. Left, creepy figure. Right, Aquino. The video subtly hints at various battlefields of PSYOP using clever shots. Warfare is evolving and all the world's a stage. In the background, we see images of people filming propaganda and a person playing the piano, because the music industry is involved in psychological warfare. The video features multiple scenes of people scrolling their phones because Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Google, Reddit, and others are mind war battlefields. An old-timey cartoon shows a bumbling clown being revealed as a ghost, aka a spook. The message of this highly symbolic image, your ridiculous entertainers are actually agents of propaganda. A clown-like entertainer, similar to the one seen in the cartoon, gets ready to perform as the words "We come in many forms" are displayed. A shot of an empty movie theater indicates that the entertainment industry is fully involved in psychological warfare against citizens. And you may appreciate this. Throughout the video, we see images of protests and political movements. The message of these scenes, these events did not happen organically. They were the result of psychological warfare. As Akino wrote, "For the mind to believe in its own decisions, it must feel that it made those decisions without coercion." That is interesting. Yes, in conclusion, Ghost in the Machine is a cleverly made recruitment video that appears to target a specific audience, conspiracy-minded people who want to take part in the conspiracy. Through various symbolic scenes, the video explains how the Fourth PSYOP group uses psychological warfare to defend American interests in foreign conflicts, especially those involving China and Russia. With that being said, a vital question begs to be asked. Is psychological warfare used against American citizens and allied countries? At the time of the inception, laws were created to prevent the military from conducting psychological warfare on its citizens. However, Akino observed that the 2003 invasion was preceded by an extreme mind war on American people. While it is possible that the fourth group is focused on foreign adversaries, psychological warfare is currently being used by all kinds of state and non-state actors. In the 21st century, globalist forces control mass media and political parties. As such, this powerful elite group has been conducting an unprecedented mind war effort to attack population, culture, and institutions. It's happening right before our eyes. So there you go. And now we've got something not conspiracy, but still sucky. This is from Vox. And what we got right now, they don't want us to have. The air conditioning paradox. How do we cool people without heating up the planet? The world is now 1.1 degrees Celsius, warmer on average than it was at the dawn of the Industrial Revolution, but baked into that seemingly small change in the average is a big increase in dangerous extreme temperatures. That's made cooling, particularly air conditioning, vital for the survival of billions of people. The devastation of extreme temperatures is playing out right now in several places around the world. A gargantuan heat wave over India and Pakistan, where 1.5 billion people live, is now in its third week. 12% of India's population is air conditioning, but even those people are suffering. The heat has triggered power outages, water shortages, and killed dozens. Several Western Europe are also facing a heat wave. Texas is facing a record-breaking heat wave. These ceiling temperatures are just the latest in a pattern of increasingly hot weather. Extreme heat events are also occurring over a wider region of the globe. Okay. Heat is dangerous and costly, even before it reaches extremes. What does this have to do? The climate paradox of air conditioning. Cooling technologies, we know about that. There are 2 billion air conditioners in the world today. It's time to rethink air conditioning. Okay. Disparities in access to air conditioning fall along racial lines. Black residents account for half of heat-related fatalities. Air conditioners pose another problem for the climate. Many of them use refrigerants. Chemicals like HFCs can be upward of 12,000 times more potent in trapping heat in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide. Small coolant leaks multiplied by billions of AC units can be devastating for the climate. So, I don't know what they're trying to do. It's whatever. Okay, so there was another story. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers star Austin St. John charged with fraud. That's not the biggest issue there. They've basically made a statement that he didn't have anything to do with it. AirPods ruptured child's eardrums due to Amber Alert. Apple faces lawsuit. Listen to this one. Apple is facing a lawsuit after the AirPods ruptured the eardrums of a 12-year-old boy. The lawsuit was filed against Apple in California in 2020, suggesting that the boy's eardrums were ruptured due to Amber Alerts. Wow. That's crazy. The volume of the AirPods was set to low. The Amber Alert produced a high-pitched noise that damages eardrums. Wow. Since the incident, the boy has suffered hearing loss, dizziness, nausea, vertigo, and tinnitus. He's now required to wear hearing aids. The lawsuit claims that Apple is aware of the defective AirPods that do not lower the sound of Amber Alerts. Moreover, Apple also did not include a warning for the potential issue that users might face. The new lawsuit against Apple seeks damage for the boy and his parents, who are under immense emotional stress from the situation. The lawsuit demands punitive damages in amounts that would punish defendants for their conduct, which would deter other technology companies from engaging in such misconduct in the future. Wow. Okay, this is an article I posted. We're actually on the 20th of May, so we're getting up there. U.S. Department of Justice will no longer prosecute good faith hackers. Good faith security research will no longer be charged under new policy revision. White hat hackers are going to breathe a little easier tonight. The U.S. Department of Justice has announced new policy revisions to the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, saying that good faith security research should not be challenged. That means security researchers who breach networks and find exploits in software and hardware will not be considered for federal prosecution, so as long as they were acting in good faith to promote the security and safety of target devices and services. Good faith security research means accessing a computer solely for the purposes of good faith testing, investigation, and or correction of a security flaw or vulnerability, where such activity is carried out in a manner designed to avoid any harm to individuals, to the public, where the information derived from the activity is used primarily to promote the security and safety of the machines, whatever, online services. Yeah, so basically if they're making sure that the shit is, you know, if you're hacking something to make sure it works, it's fine. There are exemptions to this policy. For example, a hacker uses information gained from the exploits to extort a company or a user of compromised device can be prosecuted. Leaking or selling data acquired for a legal branch of networks is also a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Okay. Okay, so that one. Okay, basically, Power Rangers Austin St. John has a statement about that. Yesterday, Department of Justice revealed it had 18 individuals. However, they said it is our understanding that Austin put his faith, reputation, and finances in the hands of third parties whose goals were self-centered and ultimately manipulated and betrayed his trust. The legal team expects to successfully defend St. John against these charges, and you can read the full post below. He's a father, husband, role model, and friend to many. The indictment detailed today is populated by a multitude of individuals, the majority of which Austin has no knowledge of and has never met or interacted with. It is our understanding that Austin put his faith, reputation, and finances in the hand of... Yeah, we talked about that. We expect Austin's legal team to successfully defend against those charges and lead to his ultimate exoneration. We ask you to respect the privacy of his family in light of this serious situation, and thank you for your support. It's from Galactic Productions. Yoshken says, whatever the state likes is what you would define a good faith hacker. And every Southerner would be going fuck off to any suggestion of cutting down on AC, says Invader Tack. Yeah. Hoshione says, don't hear these Yankees wanting to lower the heat in the winter. And Invader Tack replies, nope. Okay. We got another one. EA reportedly talked with Disney, Apple, and more about being acquired or merging. Electronic Arts has reportedly spoken with a number of tech giants like Disney and Apple about being acquired. EA is one of the biggest gaming publishers out there, thanks to its iron grip on major sports like IPs like Madden and UFC, but also manages other franchises like Battlefield, Need for Speed, and Mass Effect. Although gamers have a lot of mixed feelings on the company, there's no denying its presence in the game industry, and that makes a lucrative business for just about anyone involved, which could result in the publisher getting acquired. Wow. So EA wants to sell the company to the likes of Apple, Amazon, Disney, or one of many other giant corporations. Company has already held talks with the Affirmation companies, and no deal is actively in the works, but a deal with NBC Universal almost happened. The deal reportedly fell apart over pricing, but it shows EA is ready to make the deal if the price is right. Although the EA spokesperson denied these claims, the report noted that EA is interested in some kind of merger and has been more enthusiastic ever about the idea since the news that Microsoft was acquiring Activision. Several sources familiar with the talks say EA has been persistent in pursuing a sale and has only grown more emboldened in the wake of the Microsoft-Activision deal. Others say that EA is primarily interested in a merger arrangement that would allow Wilson to remain as chief executive of the combined company. Wow. So that is interesting. Okay. Vox talking bad about the trial. We're in the Johnny Depp trial now. Why, the Depp Heard trial is so much worse than you realize.
Well, but we've already found the verdict out on that.
I know, but this is what people were talking about. Around the third or fourth time I logged into Twitter to find Amber Heard as a psychopath at the top of the trending list, I realized that there was no longer any pretending that the Depp Heard defamation trial was not a terrible, foreboding reflection of our culture's worst impulses. The media has covered the degree to which the trial has served as a referendum on the Me Too movement, a siren called domestic abusers. The narrative of the trial has been shaped in part by what appears to be, according to multiple researchers, an army of bots, but yeah, spreading rhetoric favorable to Depp. One researcher found more bots favorable to Heard, but said most of those bots were from third-party apps trying to capitalize on the trial. Meanwhile, they found the highest pro-Depp post was shared nearly 20,000 times. The work of those bots has been further amplified by men's rights activists and the part of the far right leaning extremist manosphere. Hey, we got called out, folks! That's everybody, by the way. If you're in the manosphere, you are, according to Vox, a far right leaning extremist.
No matter what your political
stance is. That seems to have decided discrediting, and even if you're a woman, you are a far-right-leaning extremist. Yep.
You can't call a tranny or a gay.
Yep.
Gay.
That seems
but
to.
They can call.
Yeah. They can call you a.
Republicans and men
yeah.
The same thing.
Decided discrediting Amber Heard is the key to destroying every woman who accuses men of abuse or domestic violence. Conservative media outlets have also promoted a one-sided narrative of the case. Vice recently reported that Ben Shapiro's popular conservative news platform, Daily Wire, spent nearly $50,000 promoting ads about the trial on Instagram and Facebook, most of it trashing Heard. The presence of these bad actors has, if anything, exacerbated the vitriol Heard has received within the mainstream. Boo-hoo! Trial memes almost universally weighed against Heard have taken over every corner of the internet, from TikTok to Twitch to Etsy. Even Saturday Night Live has lampooned what has been portrayed as the many excesses and absurdities of the trial testimony, and social media users have similarly found the trial ripe for parody. On TikTok, for example, totally unrelated accounts seem to have given themselves over to full-time Depp Heard trial mockery, to the point where the actual substance of the testimony seems completely irrelevant besides the need to mine the proceedings for entertainment. Sure, Amber Heard cried while on the stand, but did you see how ridiculous she looked while doing it?
Yeah.
To put it mildly, the surreal explosion of internet culture vilification of Heard feels dispiriting and troubling. What made so many millions of people feel so justified in treating such a personal toxic relationship like popcorn fodder? At what point before the bot armies and men's rights activists poisoned the well of discourse among this trial could be a reasonable assessment of the evidence and the facts have made? Did that point ever exist? Most of the reporting on these memes has placed the blame for their sensationalist tone squarely on the evolution of fandom content creation. But recall that the white supremacist alt-right movement has a long history of memifying everything that they want to normalize and legitimize and keep the forefront of your mind. The alt-right latched onto this case and its bulwark long before fandom and the internet at large did. By now, after years of political disinformation campaigns, we're used to social media's natural ability to contort reality. Rarely, however, has it bent this far this rapidly for many people in service of something this vile. Oh no! Related. What we still haven't learned from Gamergate. Oh god, here we go. Oh, listen to this. Culture critic Ella Dawson is a Twitter thread compiling reporting on the myriad ways in which this trial is not only destroying years of progress made against domestic abuse in the U.S., but also laying the groundwork for a culture in which bots and bad actors harass, vilify, and eviscerate other prominent women who publicly name their abusers. Like Gamergate!
Now, I had never seen
but 10 times of millions of participants and gleefully induced by people all across American culture.
I have seen where women have time after time lied about what
some
happened.
Listen to this. Some of the arguments made against Heard sound like QAnon level conspiracy rabbit holes. Amber Heard's trial outfits, for example, have somehow become a part of a sinister narrative in which Heard is a manipulative abuser attempting to rattle and intimidate Depp by mimicking his own trial suits. The Depp Heard trial has refined the Gamergate playbook in a way that will haunt us for years to come. It has proven to extremists that if you rally around the right beloved public figure and institution, blanket them in a protective sphere of outrage and misinformation, and weaponize fandom culture already so prone to ideological radicalization and irrational groupthink, you can successfully push whatever media narrative you want into the mainstream. There's no coming back from this. The actual trial verdict is all but irrelevant now. It's not just that Amber Heard will forever be an imperfect accuser whose own volatile history was used to help destroy a revelatory movement in Me Too. It's that there will be other Amber Heards, and many of them will be marginalized with fewer resources to withstand this onslaught of hate. It is not a coincidence that the spectacle is playing out against a backdrop and perpetually escalating racist violence and the rapid erosion of decades of human rights for women, queer, and trans people. The Depp Heard trial has trained millions of people to discard their own empathy, their own rational judgment, in exchange for the gleeful mockery, rejection, and belittlement of a woman making herself vulnerable in public. If you don't think the training will be weaponized against vulnerable targets, you haven't been paying attention. Oh, fuck off, Ayaramano. She is, oh my god, she's like, she wrote what we still haven't learned from Gamergate on January the 7th.
She got the date wrong, they've been claiming it's the 6th.
No, that's what she wrote after January the 6th. Asia, but this isn't the same date, this was, I don't know, maybe it was 2021. Let me see. What was the date on that? 2021 or 2022? 2021. So it happened right after the thing. That's it. She is some... Yeah, she is a big girl. Feminist.
She's someone that no one's going to assault
sexually. No one's going to assault sexually.
They might try to milk her, but they won't assault
her. Hashtag Gamergate. Biomass field robot to chow down on veggies, not people. Makers exist. Insist. What? Oh, and we're going to end it with a real good one after this. Yeah. You're going to like this one. You're going to have a lot to say here. Biomass field robot. After we do this one, we got that one. It's on comics. Biomass field robot to chow down on veggies, not people. Makers insist. Two tech companies grapple with a challenge as they develop an autonomous hybrid vehicle that can feed itself. When Robotic Technology Inc. and Cyclone Power Technologies announced earlier this month they had completed the first phase of their project to build a robotic vehicle that could scavenge sticks, grass, leaves, and other biomass to fuel itself, the companies had no idea that their proposed machine would set off one of humanity's worst fears. The dawn of an artificially intelligent race of self-sufficient mechanical devices with a hunger for organic meals, including people. The companies quelled last week's clamor that their energetically autonomous tactical robot was being developed as a carnivore by pointing out that it will in fact be a vegetarian. Now comes the hard part, figuring out exactly how EATR would distinguish between flora and fauna, not to mention grab potential fuel with a robotic arm, deposit it into an onboard combustion chamber, and digest it into fuel. The basic technology will let EATR differentiate a piece of wood, good, from a rock, bad. Is an autonomous intelligent control system called 4DRCS. The Intelligence Systems Division of the National Institute of Standards and Technology has spent more than $125 million in 3 decades developing it. We're looking at the sensors we need. Optical, laser detection and ranging, LIDAR, infrared, acoustic and others. And the characteristics that we'll need to distinguish biomass and non-biomass, says Robert Finkelstein, president of Washington, D.C.-based robotic technology. And then locate the biomass with a 3D space so it can be grabbed by the robotic arm. Until now, autonomous vehicles such as SUVs competing in the Defense Advanced Research DARPA Grand Challenge were taught to view vegetation as obstacles rather than the main objective itself, he says, adding that his company should have necessary algorithms to do this test to develop within the next few months. Another challenge for EATR's makers would be the robot's ability to chop or otherwise break up the biomass material into smaller pieces, grab those pieces, and place in the combustion chamber. Okay, so there we go. Now, here we go. We'll have a funny one and after this one, and then we'll do it. Okay, DC seemingly confirms Bruce Wayne is canonically bisexual. DC is making drastic changes to the Caped Crusader's sexual orientation. They are trying to make Batman gay or bi.
They tried to do anything to ruin comic books.
The DC universe may have undergone some drastic changes over the years, but one thing will always remain the same. Batman will always be presented as a grounded character, and it's arguably his sole characteristic that has drawn millions of comic book fans to the Caped Crusader for generations. Shockingly enough, it turns out that even the world's greatest detective isn't exempted from going through creative changes, and with the entire comic book industry embracing diversity and inclusivity for quite some time now, Bruce Wayne seems to be following suit. We all know for a fact that the heir of Wayne Enterprises is a bona fide ladies' man, but DC Comics may have just hinted that he also fancies the opposite sex. And Batman the Knight, number 5. It was strongly hinted that Bruce Wayne may actually be bisexual. The said issue features a moment where Bruce approaches a fellow trainee named Anton. The two were seemingly sharing an intimate moment and were about to lock lips before being interrupted. Of course, this one is always up to one's interpretation. Check out the panel below. Batman potentially just got confirmed to be bisexual. That's pretty cool. Just know that some of those people are going to act like this completely ruins the character. It's an intriguing take for sure, and surprising one at that, especially considering we've always associated Batman and Bruce Wayne with different female love interests through the years. And while the comic didn't exactly confirm his bisexuality, it would be safe to assume that DC Comics is testing the waters for a possible reimagining of the character. Now, whether or not the fandom embraces Bruce's updated sexual orientation remains to be seen, but I'm pretty sure it will raise a lot of eyebrows.
I just don't think it's... Don't ruin something that's been a staple in everyone's life for so long.
Yeah, I was just talking about that.
Come up with your own character if you want to ruin something.
And I was talking about that with gay people. Like, there's actually gay people I work with. And I'm like, and I said, look, I have no problem. And the other guy that I was talking with, he feels the same way. He's like, got no problem with you making your own characters, making them gay. Matter of fact, there's like a Humble Bundle right now where they're doing gay comics. Basically, they do have some good books in there. We got a lot of material for the Cringe Quarter. Oh my God, you guys have yet to see the hell I'm going to unleash. But basically, all right. Don't, if you do buy it and you're curious and you want to read the Cringe, don't support the publisher or the charity. Just put all your money on the Humble. That's what I did. I put all my money in the Humble because it'll support other bundles that aren't, you know, woke or whatever. Even though, honestly, I'm not fucking going to give two shits about, like, lesbians or whatever. If they're I mean, I don't give a shit. There's some attractive... Yeah.
Lesbians,
yeah.
Or
well, it is if they go to the charity.
Who does it actually go to?
Oh, yeah. You're a good question there.
It's like Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. It goes to...
maybe, like, a gay guy and his family.